What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Blockhash Podcast. Before we jump in, a quick message from our sponsors, BNFT and Nitro Betting. BNFT is a groundbreaking platform that combines the unstoppable force of blockchain technology and the limitless potential of artificial intelligence, AI, to revolutionize personalized learning and earning experiences. BNFT leverages AI to create immersive educational environments for collaboration and utilizes DeFi to transcend traditional e-learning experiences. You can also earn exclusive certificates and showcase your achievements with unique NFTs. You can learn more by going to bnft.solutions and their social media channels. Nitro Betting, one of my favorites, is a top Bitcoin crypto betting site. It allows you to place bets in casino games, sports books, racing, gaming, you name it. It's your money, so you should be able to have fun with it. Too, outside of traditional investing. So check out all the action at nitrobetting.eu to get started. All links, again, are in the description below. Enjoy the episode, guys. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Blockhash Exploring the Blockchain, episode 348. Here with Aaron McDonald, co-founder of Futureverse, to talk about Futureverse as well as the Root Network and everything that they are working on. Aaron, happy to have you on the show today. I know you're probably a little jet lagged coming in from China, but pleasure to have you all the same.
Yeah, no, thanks. Awesome to be on here. Little bit jet lagged, but not too bad. I'm sure we'll make do and we'll have a good time anyway.
Absolutely. Before we kind of jump into everything and talk about the Root Network, talk about Futureverse, tell us a bit more about yourself. Who is Aaron McDonald? What's your story? What's your background? How'd you kind of get into this world?
Yeah, man. So I kind of started in technology 20 something years ago. And I was an engineer. If you could call digging trenches to lay cables for telecommunications companies engineering. And kind of moved my way up from there into more senior engineering roles. Eventually kind of landed in a kind of network architect role, went from there into product, from product into marketing, and then into kind of business management in the telecommunications IT side of things. From there into corporate venture, and then from corporate venture jumped out into startup world. And I started getting interested in Web3 around 2015. And in 2016 started my first venture in the space, and we built a accelerator incubator to help companies who were building technology to help improve the user experience primarily. And so started building up portfolio of companies that were working on different problems and onboarding users into Web3. It was a really kind of central thing to our thesis that if decentralization was going to work, it had to work for everyone. Otherwise, we kind of end up with the same paradigm we have now, but just different people in charge. And so after a while of kind of building up, I think to 30 odd portfolio companies in that early stage space, we started to help those companies grow and then start think about, how do you bring those users into understand this technology and fall in love with it. And the thing that kind of became core to that was doing the same thing again, but for content companies that were, we saw content as the gateway drug, and started to work on incubating and accelerating companies that were building in that space. So we had some really good successes there early on. And we're then approached by some people to bring a few of those companies on the technology side and on the content side together to form Futureverse. And we kind of did that over the last year.
Very nice. So what is Futureverse exactly? What are you guys working on in particular?
Yeah, I mean, so Futureverse is like a vertically integrated media tech company. That's the way I describe it. And our mission is to become the foundation for the open metaverse, or at least create the technologies that become the foundation for the open metaverse. we've been super focused on how do you bring that technology and IP together in a way that demonstrates A, that this stuff is easy, B, that the ideas everyone has in their head about how the metaverse should work actually does work, and see that we can take that out in a really fun and engaging way to consumers so that they can onboard into something that is cool to do, and then from there learn about Web3 and how powerful and important it is, rather than starting with kind of the technology, throwing it in their faces, or this kind of complex user onboarding experience. And then if you can get past that mountain of effort, you might fall in love with it. We want to try and like bring people the other way in. So if you look at our kind of core strategy, it's like make the technology invisible. Like any great technology should feel like magic. Demonstrate that technology through awesome creative work that our teams build and we build with our global partners. And then use play to learn to help teach people and help them understand why Web3 is really important.
Very cool. What are those technologies that make the open metaverse possible? We're all excited about and building out a metaverse, an open metaverse, hopefully one day. But yeah. What's technology that builds that foundation?
I think the first thing that's really important to understand in that is what our view of the metaverse is. Because I think when people hear that term, quite often what comes to mind is like an application, a game. And we've had those for ages, and it's like, yeah, well, you can do this thing now and you can create stuff inside it. Well, that, you know, we've had Minecraft and Roblox for a long time. Various sim games over the decades. The other thing that jumps to mind is like bringing your own content or content tradability. Well, we've had those things before. So the thing that like makes the metaverse, I think, quite distinctly different is, one, it's just an evolution of the internet. It's not a separate thing. We live in the metaverse today. If you think about, look at the way people and society behave and interact in society, there is no digital economy. There's just the economy. The average person who's born in this generation is going to spend 46 years of their life looking at a screen. We're in the metaverse now.
Right.
And so that's like really important and fundamental, I think, is that it is not a game or an app. It is the evolution of the internet. Now, the thing that makes it kind of different than what we've had before is this idea called immersive convergence, which is the idea that we're bringing different kinds or different silos of user experience on the internet together into one more immersive user experience. And so like an example of that would be, back in the day when I was in telecommunications, you had telecommunications companies, which were responsible for communications, and you had media companies, that were working on like broadcast media. They were so far apart that they had their own networks. That's like how distinct they were as offerings to consumers. Social media comes along and bashes together communications and media into form a more cohesive, immersive user experience. Another thing that used to be separate was commerce, right? Even on the internet, e-commerce was a distinct thing from social media. Along comes something like TikTok, where social commerce is growing to be the fastest and biggest selling channel in Southeast Asia for products on the internet. And so that experience that was separate has been converged again. And that's happening with gaming and with finance, and all of the things that we used to consume as separate things are coming together in one immersive customer experience. And by immersive, I don't mean a 3D world or VR or AR, or that can be part of it. It's about that data layer. It's about the portability of me inside of the digital world. And so the metaverse is much more about that data layer and making it simpler to connect to more things and have less friction in the barriers between those things. Probably the best example of the metaverse at scale today is WeChat. If you think about it, you can create your digital self inside of there and instantly access a whole world of services and features. When we talk about the metaverse, that's what we're talking about. It's the collection of interoperable applications and experiences centered around me as a digital human. And most importantly, the third part that makes it distinct, I think, from something like WeChat is about data ownership. And so, you know, if we think about the ultimate kind of portability for users between applications, the root of that has to be the user owns their data. Because if it's locked inside an application, again, then you don't have true interoperability because it will always be guarded by whoever owns that application. And so data interoperability is super key to the open metaverse. And without it, we can't really have the metaverse that everyone imagines to be true. And so put that all together, you know, it's immersive convergence. It's bringing stuff together. It's about the data layer. And it's most importantly about enabling personal ownership of data. And the only way to do that is Web3 technology, because unless the infrastructure is community owned, the data never is. And so in the context of that, the things that we're trying to do is enable people, first of all, to take control of that data, do that in a really user-friendly way, make it safe for everyone to join and go through that process or onboard into that process. We're creating the tools that enable them to express that data in creative ways that can be understood by lots of different applications, so create content that is portable. And then we're providing best case examples of how to connect content and data up into experiences that touch all those areas of our lives we talked about earlier, and make it possible to experience what people imagine when they see the movie Ready Player One.
Hey guys, taking a quick break from the podcast to bring you a message from our sponsor, Nitro Betting. Nitro Betting takes your desire for anonymity seriously and allows you to play without the need to worry about identity checks, personal information, all of that stuff. It's a betting site, not an investment site. You need to have fun. So you should be able to just do that. As a top trusted Bitcoin betting site, Nitro Betting has got your back. So be sure to check them out at nitrobetting.eu. Back to the episode, guys. Yeah, I love that term, first of all, immersive convergence. It's got such a nice ring to it. Sounds so.
I stole that from Tencent, actually. I was meeting with one of their senior execs, and they used the term, and I was like, I'm definitely going to steal that, but I will credit you for it.
What you say makes a lot of sense in terms of immersive convergence and how these technologies kind of come together modern day to create what the metaverse really is today. And we all have like this vision of like Ready Player One, and you can walk around in the metaverse and you're like in a whole different world. And how do you envision getting to that point? Like, I imagine there's a lot of other technologies in between that make that possible. Yeah. But is that like the ultimate vision, like being able to have a fully, completely immersive experience?
I think that that's where we will end up, you know, from a user experience point of view. If you think about like the consumers of digital technology, each generation has had its genesis in some kind of UX, and they were birthed into that UX, and therefore that's the thing that's important to them. So we've had like a generation that came through web, and like web is their native experience because that's how they grew up. And then there's a generation that came, you know, on PC, and then there's a generation that came up through mobile and mobile apps, and so that's their experience. And then there's a generation that came up through virtual world experiences. And so that's their native experience. And that's what they're going to expect when they kind of go and, you know, keep going into society. And that trend is like heading towards more and more immersive virtual spaces. You know, you think about like what's going to happen when the Vision Pro comes out. You know, there's a very good chance that that idea of augmented reality starts to get, you know, some serious traction, and that will become now the user interface for that next generation. And so as a society, we're like trending towards these more like visceral social interactions in digital spaces. But it doesn't mean that everything has to be there. I think you can get the idea of immersive convergence across the spectrum of those things, you know, from a website through to a mobile app through to something that is kind of a virtual world experience through to something that is VR or AR, oriented. They all have to work like seamlessly because different experiences will be appropriate for different kinds of things. And so we're building technology that makes it easy to deploy assets that can transverse those different experiences and make your data portable to those different experiences and easy for applications to access. And more putting the power of that creativity into the hands of users. I think if we want more virtual spaces to exist, you have to scale up the number of people who can create them. You know, it was super hard to do that. Even if you think about like the last metaverse hype cycle, which was only, 12 months ago, let's say. If we'd had some of the generative tools that we have now back then out in the market and public use, I think we would have seen a very different end to that cycle because everyone got excited about the idea of creating these spaces and everyone kind of got excited about using them. But it's super hard. It's expensive to do. There aren't enough resources in the world to do it. You know, gamer salaries like went on a curve like that, game developer salaries. And so, so if we can get the technology into the hands of everyday users to create those kinds of experiences, we'll have the same kind of thing happened as when we allowed consumers and small businesses to create social presence using social media tools. You know, we'll see that explode as a default user experience because it's easy to do now. It used to be hard to set up all of the stuff you had to set up, you know, that kind of e-commerce or social experience online. It became easy and then it became the dominant way people interacted with it. And so like a big part of what we do is working on those generative tools, connecting them to these pipelines and asset registers that make them interoperable, and then connecting that with the data layer, you know, through things like Future Pass.
Got it. Yeah. Well, what is Future Pass exactly?
So Future Pass is like a passport, I guess, to the open metaverse. And it's a really simple way to onboard new users into Web3 that is like authentically Web3. So you can come in as a new user and sign up using your email address like you would normally for any account in an app on the App Store or in the Web2 world. And it creates a smart wallet on chain that has a sharded key system behind it. So the user can keep control of their assets in a genuinely Web3 way, but they don't have to think about it on day one. They can come in, join, start using the application or piece of content that caught their eye, have that on-chain account sitting there under their control, and then start to learn about, you know, the bits of Web3 that make being your own bank or being your own sovereign individual important, and increasingly make choices about taking control over that. It's designed to be able to work between blockchains. We think that decentralization is important in the idea of decentralization for infrastructure to be decentralized, and different people will make different choices about where they want to anchor their content and data and assets. And so Future Pass can connect those things together across multiple blockchains and make them, or even Web2 applications, and make them available to applications on the other side in a really simple way for developers to engage with. The Future Pass is anchored in the Root network. And the reason for that is that we had to make sure that the process of onboarding to the blockchain was really seamless and smooth as well. So we had to kind of come up with a way to overcome those user experience hurdles that exist for people joining into Web3.
Got it. Yeah, the Root network is another thing I wanted to ask about. How do you guys leverage it, and what are some of the benefits of using that kind of as a backend?
Yeah, I think like when we went out there and started to think about how to solve user experience problems, we looked at and talked to pretty much all the major players out there and in the layer one and layer two space. And in kind of going through what their value proposition was, they were almost always universally something along the lines of, we're faster and cheaper than ETH, you know, like to sum it up.
Right.
And I think there's been a huge amount of focus on scalability in terms of those two things, and no, almost no focus on scalability in terms of making it fucking simple for people to use. And right. So in the absence of that, we went and started to think about what is the user experience journey that needs to be true for Web3 to actually scale, you know, beyond fast and cheap, and broke down where those user experience pain points are for coming on board, and what's required to make it safe for a user when they get there. There's no point doing all the hard work to bring someone in and then they get nuked afterwards. And so in doing that, we kind of designed that user experience and then built that into Root, into the kind of runtimes inside of the Root network. And like a really simple example of that is the way that we constructed the gas fee economy. So inside Root, you can come in and onboard without ever having to think about gas or what it is. And you think about that, like from a Web2 user experience, imagine you went to use Netflix, right? And you download it for the first time, start to go through the sign up process, and it says, hey, by the way, because Netflix is hosted on AWS, like in a custom instance over there, you guys have to go and create an AWS cloud account. Oh, and by the way, in order to create your like cloud account, so that you can use the infrastructure that our app is hosted on, we want you to KYC so that you can like, you know, onboard and buy some infrastructure from us. And by the way, like, we don't take your credit card. You have to go and sign up for this other bank's credit card in order to pay for this thing. That's the Web3 user onboarding experience, just to get in and start using something simple. And so in the Root network, we have this gas fee exchange, which means that users can onboard using the native token of that application. So if you onboard and you got some V-Bucks, you can spend V-Bucks to use the network, or you can delegate gas to the developer. And so they can pay on your behalf. So simple things like that built into the chain code and through the layers of experience inside the Root network enable us to give this really like simple onboarding journey without breaking how Web3 works and without resorting to centralized solutions.
Got it. No, yeah, that's a really interesting point too about Web3, because it is very difficult, I think, still to this day to get people onboarded properly into any kind of application, any platform. Yeah. But yeah, whether it's payment or credit cards or just getting a MetaMask, you know, there's so many things that you got to educate people on because they're just not familiar with it. It's such a different world. So the whole bridging from Web 2 to Web 3 is a whole experiment in and of itself to figure out. It's cool that that's something you guys are really working on.
Yeah, I mean, even take that in as an example, like going back the other way, because when you look at that user experience journey properly, you have to kind of fix both sides coming into Web 3 and then using Web 3 in the world we exist in today. On that side, I co-founded and Futureverse is a major shareholder in a company called Immersive, and Immersive is creating digital MasterCards as NFTs and connecting that directly to assets on chain without an exchange in the middle. So you can come on board using something like FuturePass in a really simple way, create a virtual MasterCard that is directly connected to your wallet and spend that at a merchant anywhere in the world. And so that whole loop is complete.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. What's next for you guys with Futureverse? You know, whether it's this year in 2023 or going into next year in 2024, what are some things that you guys are excited about that you're working on or rolling out or that's just on the roadmap?
Yeah, I mean, the thing for us in that next half is really getting out and demonstrating all of these tools in action with the partners that we've collected around the world. So we've gone and built partnerships in five channels we think are really important to onboarding users: mass market and media, so it's like film and TV, music, culture and celebrities, consumer goods, and sports. And so we'll be showcasing applications and experiences across all of those categories with brands that are known the world over, and showing how that, importantly, showing how that layer of interoperability works between them. And in doing that, you know, demonstrate the metaverse in action, and then start to help onboard other developers who want to build inside of that ecosystem and use those tools. The other thing that's really exciting is getting some of these tools that we've been using internally out to end users, so they can start to kind of create and conjure the metaverse themselves and start to add to, you know, richness on top of that, and help it scale.
Awesome. Where can people go to learn more about Futureverse if they want to check it out, if they want to dig into the documentation, they want to learn about the Root Network, or if they just want to keep up with everything, or do you guys have a community too? Where would you direct people?
Yeah, I think if you just jump to futureverse.com, you can start to explore what the Futureverse is. You can read the white paper there on our Futureverse thesis plus the Root Network. Jump into our socials on Discord, follow us on Twitter at Futureverse, and we'd be welcoming to anyone who wants to ask questions. The community is really, really open, friendly, so they'll help out in that process too.
Awesome. Aaron, thank you for taking the time to come on and talk about Futureverse, talk about the Root Network and the metaverse in general too. I think it's something that, you know, we're all excited for, but I don't think we've really comprehended, you know, how much it'll change life, whether it's in your personal social life, whether it's for business or your job or, you know, whatever it may be. Like, there's so many different really cool aspects that I think will change the way we look at reality. In the way we do everything in normal day life. So it's cool to learn more about where you feel we are with this immersive convergence here with technology. I love the term. I'm going to have to use it every once in a while too, but I'll credit you.
Cool. Awesome, man. Hey, it's been great being on here and having the chat.
Yeah. I appreciate it very much. We'll talk again soon. Take care. Get some rest.
Bye.
Hey guys, hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Quick message one more time from our sponsor, Nitro Betting. Nitro Betting gives you so many options to bet, guys, to wager, to play with a deep sports book from the NFL to NBA to NHL to MLB to MMA to motorsports to poker to blackjack to esports like Rocket League, Call of Duty. There's plenty of diversity and choice for you guys to use your crypto and have fun. So go to nitrobetting.eu to experience everything they have to offer and sign up for an account. See you guys on the next episode.